Members, we'll get started here. The hour of 12:45 having arrived, I do call to order the February 27th meeting on Greater Minnesota Jobs and Economic Development. And we do have a quorum. Representative Liz Lagarde did check in. He stepped out for a minute, so we do have quorum. Can I get a motion to approve the minutes from February 25th?
So moved.
Representative Sandsteed moves for approval of the February 25th minutes. Any discussion, members? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Motion prevails, and the minutes are approved from February 25th. And first up on the agenda, we have two bills from Representatives Sundin, House File 108 and House File 959. Representative Sundin, which bill would you like to take up first?
I believe we're ready to go with 108.
All right, House File 108. I will move House File 108 to be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Sundin, please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lean. This is phase two of an excellent project that we've been working on. Phase one was a water treatment plant in the city of Carlton, and now we want to move that nice, fresh, clean water westward for economic development purposes, west on Highway 210. It's a $9 million appropriation, and I have with me a few testifiers. One is Mark Thell, one is Tim Corby, one is Randy Willey. Randy Willey is the Twin Lakes superintendent. That's the township that the line will be going through. So Randy Willey can explain the need for this water line.
All right. Sir, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Randy Willey. Like Mike said, I'm a Twin Lakes Township supervisor, and currently I sit on the Joint Powers Water Board with the City of Carlton and a representative of Twin Lakes Township. Like Mike said, we were requesting a $9 million for a project, the water distribution system out, and we're tucked in actually between Jay Cook Park and the Fond du Lac reservation. We have a corridor there that has a serious water quantity and a water quality problem. Currently, the water distribution system would serve not only our residents along that corridor, but also the small businesses that have struggled with this for decades, actually. And then also be servicing a MnDOT facility, the Carlton County Transportation Building, also a industrial park that Carlton County is looking to develop. And it would serve the small businesses along there and also some Fond du Lac properties. The water issues that we've dealt with out there have been severe. The quantity is in short supply, and then also the quality is, and we do have a sample of the water that we brought along with us to kind of show and indicate what kind of issues we have out there. This would be a huge economic boost to that area out there. Also put to rest some of the concerns that our residents have with the drinking water supply that we have out there. So at this point, I'd like to turn it over to Derek Wolf. He loves to talk in front of people, and so I'm going to let him do that. So thank you.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you. And
Mr. Chair,
yes, Representative Sundin.
Derek Wolf of the Water Department of Carlton, Minnesota, will be stepping in lieu of Tim Corby, as listed on the agenda. So.
Sounds good. Mr. Wolf, welcome to the committee. Just state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Derek Wolf. I'm the Public Works Superintendent and the Fire Chief for the City of Carlton. Thank you again for having us. It's an honor to be here. Like Randy said, this project is vital to the area. This project provides a long-term solution to the water quality and quantity issue, along with providing economic growth and jobs. This water right here was taken this morning at a local gas station at 9 o'clock. It has not settled out. It has not done anything. Currently, they have 3,000-gallon holding tanks in their shower room, so they're not actually able to provide their showers to the truck drivers and the patrons that are in their businesses. They have to have their low-flow wells pumping into these 1,000-gallon tanks all the time in order to just flush the toilets. Again, this project is vital to the area. We need your guys' support in order to make it affordable for the residents. We don't want to drive anybody out of their homes, and we're very thrilled to be at this point. Along, like Mike said, we were with the city of Carlton's doing the water treatment plant, and this is kind of the tail end of our project, and we'd really need your support, and we appreciate you guys having us here. So.
Thank you, Mr. Wolf. Representative Sundin, do you have another testifier scheduled?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Mark Fell, newly elected Carlton County Commissioner, has been very familiar with this project all along, and I think he can weigh in better on the county concerns better than anyone.
All right, Commissioner Thiel, please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Mark Fell, Commissioner from the communities that are involved in the project. Members, Mr. Chair, it's great that you took the time. Three words sums it up in a hurry here: location, location, location. Without adequate supply of drinkable water, the business community that's there can't proliferate. Highway 210 corridor is an economic development zone for us to be able to put some restaurants, do some different things in that corridor. If you can imagine, I don't know if how many of you have been in the city of Carlton, but it sits on a rock bed. It's slate rock. And as you proceed from there out to the interchange of the interstate, you come into a bedrock with about 30 feet of soil, and most of it's gravel. So the water supply there has been challenged. And about 25 years ago, they started diverting with the sewer systems, moving the recharge away and taking it down to WSD, which I think you're going to be talking about in a minute or two, too. So that's kind of what's happening out there. So without this commitment, the extra money that we need, the county also owns a chunk of land out there. We've taken gravel off of that over the years. That piece of land needs to go back into enterprise zones for small businesses, the transportation buildings out there, but the limited ability water. And the other thing that comes into this is also public safety. There will be some water hydrants out there. So for fire suppression, that'll be an added bonus to this. Instead of trucking water from Carlton out, this is a win-win. So thank you. And again, location, location, location. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Members, any questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sounds as if the project is needed up there in the area. Is the $9 million the total cost of the project, or is this just a good boost, a shot on the arm?
Representative Sundin.
Thank you. This is actually the final piece of the puzzle, I guess is the best way to put it. Years ago, the city of Carlton constructed a new water tower that is will be served now with this new filtration plant and supply plant. Is all we need to do now is get the bulk of that water out to people that really do need it. And just to clarify a little bit more, Highway 210 intersects with I-35, and it's just an ideal place for commercial development, and they're struggling to make progress there. And as Commissioner Thell said, the water is the key to success here.
Representative Lehman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually had the same question. So this is the final piece. Do you know what the total cost of the project is?
I think Mr. Wolf could probably weigh in best.
Mr. Wolf.
Thank you. The water treatment plant we're constructing right now is a $5.8 million, which we received, I believe, $3.2 million in grant last year, and then doing the low-interest loan for the rest of it. So this $9 million would cover the distribution portion of it. So the $9 million is the total amount needed to do the entire system.
Representative Lehman.
Okay, Mr. Chair, to the testifier, So is the community being assessed for any part of this, or is it all coming in the form of loans and grants?
Mr. Wolf.
Oh, sorry, thank you. Yes, there would be assessments and stuff, but that piece is still being worked out by the engineering firm. So, yes, there is plans of doing assessments and access charges. So.
Representative Lehman.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gunther.
That water looks kind of interesting. Could you almost sell that for lemonade, couldn't you?
Representative Sundin.
Mr. Chairman, do you have any glasses we could pass around and share?
You drink first.
25 cents a cup, huh?
For you, I can make a deal.
Get a deal for you.
Any other member questions? Representative Salk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do I understand correctly that currently there's probably like no wells? People are using this water system, inadequate water system, to just get through life right now, and then this, of course, will bring clean water to them? Or are there wells out there that need to be abandoned and capped and that sort of thing?
Representative Sundin.
Thank you. It's all wells out there right now. And some of the residential wells, you can see what's going on out there. It's seeing is believing, I hope.
Other member questions? Seeing none, is there anybody in the audience who wishes to testify for or against the bill? Seeing none, Representative Sundin, any closing comments on the bill?
Just last remarks. I think you've heard from all the community players. You've got some letters from some of the businesses and other concerned people. The Fond du Lac tribe has land that just a couple parcels of land will be affected by this, and they've been tremendous partners in this effort and several others. So it's the whole community is behind this.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Members, I will renew my motion that House File 108 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed nay. Motion prevails, and House File 108 is re-referred to Ways and Means. And next up, we have House File 959. I will move House File 959 to be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In Committee 959 is, again, the crowning jewel of another project for the Western Lake Superior Sanitary District. I have Marianne Bourne from the district ready to explain the project, and I think this is the tail end of this particular project.
Ms. Bourne, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Marianne Bourne. I'm the executive director at the Western Lake Superior Sanitary District, and there are materials being distributed, you know, as we're speaking here. I think to go through this project, first I'd just like to briefly explain who we are. We are a regional wastewater treatment facility in northeastern Minnesota. We cover 530 square miles. We have 17 municipal customers, including Carlton, who is just up here presenting, as well as Hermantown, Duluth, North Shore, Renshaw. And in addition to our responsibility for wastewater treatment for the region, we also have wastewater treatment responsibility for the major industries in the area, of which there are two large paper mills. So we consider ourselves a very important part of keeping the St. Louis River clean, and also a very important economic driver to support business, industry, and residents. So this project in and of itself, as a utility, a large utility, one of the things that we are continually pressured is to meet all of our capital needs to keep equipment up to date, to keep lines and pump stations operating, and still provide our services at a rate that are affordable to businesses and communities. And so part of that was really generated a really detailed strategic planning discussion within the Western Lake Superior Sanitary District. What types of things could we do that actually had a benefit to the environment, but also were a cost saver to our residents and business customers. And one of the things identified is when you treat, in a process like ours, when you treat wastewater, we take the solids that settle after wastewater treatment, we put them into 4 1-million-gallon digestion tanks and treat those further. The outcome of that is methane-based gas, which we collect and use during weather like this for building heat, but in warm weather, we have no use for it, and so we flare it. The solids, which come down to basically nutrients, phosphorus, nitrogen. We have a farm program. Those that biosolids product is a farm implement, so it's used within local large farming communities, and also on the Iron Range for mine reclamation. And so we have our nice closed-loop system. But the methane-based gas that we produce, the 4-million-gallon digesters that we have a lot of capacity. We could take more materials in those digesters, things like food waste, which already comes for composting to our facility from our region, fat soils and grease from local restaurants. And we could generate more methane-based gas at this particular point in time. We just don't have the equipment where we can do anything with it beneficial. Well, one of the things we are pursuing is moving forward with putting in engine generators, and that's our ask in this bill. If we install engine generators in our facility, we're able to take that methane-based gas, convert it into electricity, and use it to power our facility to the point that we see in the foreseeable future with this that the facility itself will be energy self-sustaining. And the reason that is so vitally important is a third of our operating costs are purchased electricity. We also, in the city of Duluth, for those of you that remember this, in 2012, had a pretty major flood. And our ability to produce our own electricity and power our own plant also improves the resiliency of our product and services. As far as the project itself, it's almost easier to understand in a quick little video. So that's what we have. It takes less than 2 minutes, and we'll just play that, which I think kind of also gives you a good overview of the project itself. We won't worry about the video. In your handout, one of the things that you do have is kind of the video in, oh, here we go. You know what, you've got time constraints. We're not going to worry about the video. So the one thing I will point out is the video itself takes less than 2 minutes to watch. This handout summarizes the materials in that, which basically talk about the fact that our engine generators are a combined heat and power project. And that means we can take the methane-based gas that we produce in the wastewater treatment facility, use it to produce electricity for use in our to power our plant, but also the heat that's generated off the engine generators themselves are used then for building heat. So it really does reduce our overall need for purchased outside electricity. The thing that makes that so vitally important, the project itself is $10.56 million. Our ask is 50% of that, which is $5.26 million in this bonding request. The rest of the money itself, we would take low-interest loans so that, you know, payment of that is built into our rates. The project saves our users $1 million a year. The payback on the project is roughly 10 years. It is a project, when you put the generators in place, that is sustainable for 20-plus years. Engine generators themselves are proven technology. This technology itself is in place, particularly in wastewater treatment plants in Europe and also in our own state. St. Cloud has really taken advantage of the same concept to really become energy neutral and energy self-sufficient. As far as a project, about $2.9 million of this project is actual construction dollars, and that equates to about 14 construction jobs over the course of a year. But that's not the big economic driver. The big economic driver are the residents and businesses within this 530-square-mile area, including the 1,000-plus jobs in the forest products industry that are very, very dependent on affordable wastewater rates. And so our ask would be, if there is a bonding bill, we really hope that you'll consider this project for the benefit of the region. And nice green energy project, nice sustainable energy project, but also really economically impactful to the residents and the businesses within northeastern Minnesota.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Bourne. And I do believe next up we have another testifier, Wayne Brandt. The Minnesota Forest Industries.
And Wayne is has a meeting at the DNR, but would like to express to you, you also have in the packet the letters of support, would like to express to you on behalf of the Minnesota Forest Industries the importance of this project to the industry itself.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Bourne. Members, any questions? Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, what are you currently do with the methane produced at the plant?
Ms. Bourne.
During cold weather months, we collect that gas. We have a hot water heating system, and so we actually heat the facility during cold weather months versus buying natural gas with the biogas that we produce. But once temperatures get above 40 degrees roughly, we don't have the need for the heat, and so we actually have a flare on site that burns off the excess gas. And so what we tell people is, it's in the back of the plant, is if you're coming from Superior to Duluth over the High Bridge in the summer, in the evening, you will see a large, what people call, candle burning all summer long. And that's methane-based gas that is just being burned off and wasted, which is what makes this such a vital project for us to move forward on.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. Yeah, that speaks well to this project. I've heard in some large dairy operations that because power has gotten cheaper, whatever, it's difficult to get a purchase agreement that would actually make it cash flow. But you're saying you have a 10-year payback on this, so that's good. That's good.
Ms. Bourne, any comment?
Yep. And part of the reason for that is back in 2001, the district did put in 4 million gallon digesters. That was a $30 million project back in 2001. So those projects, that particular critical piece of infrastructure is already there and has already been paid for. All we need to do is put in the engine generators now to take advantage of this opportunity.
Representative Anderson.
That reminds me of one more question. So will you be producing, ideally, more electricity than you need? Will you be using a net metering type thing, or what about excess production?
Ms. Bourne.
Very good question. And that's part of, I think, what comes out in the video, is right now, without supplementing what's going into the digester, we will produce about 65% of our electrical needs. This project is part of a consortium of projects that we've been working on to decrease our overall electrical demand. And we've done a lot of things in the plant that have decreased our overall demand by 18%. We have a new oxygen production facility that will be coming online this fall, which will also decrease our electrical demand by about 25%. So all of the reduction projects we have going in, that we have in place, in combination with our ability to produce our own electricity, should make us pretty close to energy neutral. Now, if we get to the point where we're able to produce more electricity, more gas than we need, mm-hmm. the next step would really be looking at scrubbing and compressing the remaining gas and using it in propane-based vehicles. Because at 530 square miles of service area, we have a lot of trucks on the road, and that would be our secondary. So our belief is we could use all of it ourselves, but we will have the capability to sell back, and our working on the interconnection agreement with Minnesota Power right now.
Other member questions? Seeing none, is there anybody in the audience who wishes to testify for or against House File 959? Seeing none, Representative Sundin, any closing comments on the bill?
Thank you, Chair Lee and the committee. I moved down to the Duluth area about 40-plus years ago, and I'd come down that hill, and I'd look at that city, and it was dirty. They were still using coal in some of the houses, the boats, with all the smog from the boats. It was just disgusting. You come down that hill now, and the boats have cleaned up their act, but the bulk of the cleanup in that St. Louis River estuary and the city of Duluth is a result of WLSSD efforts across the board. You can, it's obvious that all their projects are well thought out. And just to touch on the forestry issue just a little bit more, one of the mills that was referenced up in Cloquet there, that's already 95% energy efficient, self-sufficient because of their cogeneration. And that makes that plant so desirable to stay in production, and they've diversified and done well. And that's exactly what the city of Duluth has done, that they've diversified into many other things other than hard industry. But they've done such a great job there. So, you know, because of the WLSSD activity, it's just tremendous. This is an environmentally responsible bill, and it's financially responsible as well as a ratepayer for the last 40 years. I do appreciate the efforts.
All right. Thank you. I renew my motion that House File 959 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed nay. The motion prevails, and the bill is re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
And next up, members, we have House File 181, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Welcome, Representative Murphy, to the committee. I will move your bill, House File 181, to be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you very much. With your last vote, Willard Munger, former Representative Willard Munger, would be smiling because it was his vision that created the WLSSD and that has worked so well for these 40 years in our area, and it's the best thing that's ever happened to Lake Superior. I have another problem with Lake Superior, and it's in my district, the Duluth North Shore Sanitary District. Was created quite a few years ago when we were, there was a great deal of talk about who was contaminating the water of Lake Superior, and we found that on the North Shore, which is mostly Lakewood and Duluth Township residents at the present time, and some Duluth people, we're having failing septic tanks. There's so much rock in the area that it's hard to put a district through, pipes through the solid rock and so forth. But the sanitary district was created, and the sanitary district created many costs that there were unknown when they started. They didn't know how much rock there was. They didn't know for sure how many people would be hooking up, and they were led to believe that many more people would hook up than did hook up. But they proceeded because they didn't want to be fined under the Federal Clean Water Act regulations. So we have created the North Shore Sanitary District, who every month pays the highest bills in the state of Minnesota, even though that in 2016 we did give this sewer district some debt relief of $1.2 million, and we were at that time we were asking for $2.4 million. and we were able to come up with $1,200,000. And today, or it's a little more than $220,000. And today I'm asking for the other half of that, 2.4, to reduce the debt service enough so that they're in the ballpark of the highest paying citizens in the state for their sewers. But they will still be the highest monthly rate payers. Kevin Bovee is here. He is a member of the board of the North Shore Sanitary District, and he has actual full-time credentials for from beginning to now of what's happened.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. And Mr. Volby, just state your name for the record.
Kevin Volby.
Thank you.
I'm the chairman of the Duluth North Shore Sanitary District. We had hoped to have Dean Corey, the vice chair of the district, along with me, but his day job wouldn't allow it, so you're stuck with me. I'll offer a very brief background. The Duluth North Shore Sanitary District was created in 2000 by the Township of Lakewood, Township of Duluth, and the City of Duluth. Prior to the district's creation, this entity was a joint powers board, and towards the end of that period is when I came on board, so I've been a member of the board for 20-some-odd years. The district is located along North Shore of Lake Superior, stretching from Lester River approximately 12.5 miles east up to the Lake County, St. Louis County lines. As Representative Murphy said, the district was created because there is a significant need for treatment and disposal of domestic sewage. In 1991, a survey was conducted and the results indicated that 55% of the on-septic systems within the district were failing, according to MPCA rules, and then also 7% of the drinking water samples analyzed did not meet Minnesota Department of Health safe drinking standards, all because of failing septic systems. And as Representative Murphy said and did a great job, there was unforeseen costs that didn't come up that we didn't know about. The original cost to construct the system was approximately $16 million, including, well, $15.8 million, including $6 million WIF grant, and the remainder being loans. The construction occurred from 2003 to 2005, which kind of gets us up to the present. Back in 2016, we approached the legislature for some relief, asking for $2.4 million, which, if awarded, would have brought our cost down to being similar in cost to the second most expensive sanitary district in the state. We were successful in getting half of what we asked for, and now we're back seeking the other half. Even though the DNSSD immediately provided debt relief to its constituents as a result of the 2016 legislative season, our residents still pay the highest fees for wastewater in the state of Minnesota. The additional $1.2 million in one-time funding, which we're asking for, will bring the annual cost for each household down to $135 per month. This will bring us in line with the second highest facility in Minnesota, and even at that rate, the 135 figure excludes our 20-year special assessment. If you add that in, that gets us up over $150 a month. Our small 435 constituent district still has $8 million in bonding outstanding, which will finally expire in 2037. The residents of the North Star Sanitary District are expecting to pay $135 a month for another 18 years, far exceeding the term of a normal 20-year assessment. Our residents have already paid in excess of $160 per month for 13 years, and these costs far exceed any numbers projected when the project was initially discussed. This is a very high cost burden to a very few residents. We feel that we have done more than our share of cleaning up Lake Superior and the local surface and groundwater systems of the North Shore. And I just want to thank you all for your time and for hearing the background leading up to House File 181.
Thank you, Mr. Bovee. Members, any questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. In explaining some of the reasons for the poor cash flow you talked about, not getting enough signed up, was it a voluntary sign-up to when you originally got this going?
No. It was when the district was formed, everybody within the district was mandated to hook up.
Well, then,
Representative Anderson.
So wouldn't you have had those numbers down pretty hard and fast to know how many were going to be signing up? It sounded like there was a shortfall of not enough people signing up, is the impression I got.
Well, there's...
Mr. Bowlby.
Not enough people. The numbers that we got originally when we planned this was incorrect. As Representative Murphy said, the number of septic tanks to be abandoned was about half, because every septic tank had to be abandoned, crushed, filled. The amount of bedrock was terribly, terribly underestimated. And so you just keep adding all this on top of everything else, and the numbers just didn't add up once we started.
Representative Anderson. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Murphy, I've been around here when we've had to go after septic tanks and some of the problems that they create. We had a lot of that down in southern Minnesota just a few years back. So do you have any in this sewer area, do you have any septic tanks left that are being used?
Not on the shore.
Not on the shore.
But in the area, yes.
Okay.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm always supportive of trying to dig something in that area up there because I used to sell well drilling supplies. And I have great pity for the people on the shore trying to dig something up in that place because they'd have to go down 700 feet of rock before they get to water. I can't imagine trying to put sewers and other things in that water in that area. So,
right. Thank
you, Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, and that's true. And some of the wells that were dug in that area just before that time, they also got salt water, and so they didn't even have water. Clean drinking water then, because for some reason there's salt in the area also.
Must be from a long time ago.
Yep. A couple glaciers ago.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other member questions? Seeing none, is there anybody in the audience who wishes to testify for or against House File 181? Seeing none, Representative Murphy, do you have any closing comments on the bill?
No, I would just like to... for full disclosure, because it's a project that's already completed. We cannot sell bonds for it, but it's been in the capital investment bill before with cash. And so that's what we're asking for, is cash.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Members, with that, I will renew my motion that House File 181 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Motion prevails, and the bill, House File 181, is re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And next up, we have Representative Schumacher with House File 313. Representative Schumacher, gentlemen, welcome to the committee. I will move House File 313 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. The bill in front of you this afternoon is a bonding request of $5.75 million for the Red Rock Rural Water Systems for a new water treatment plant, new water tower, and water lines. Access to quality water is an issue we're dealing with every year as a state, and this project will impact 1,500 rural homes and businesses and 5,100 people in four communities along the path, including of statewide importance the state park at Lake Chetek. The total cost of the project is $11.5 million, and the other half of the request is coming from a USDA loan and over $600,000 from local investments. With me today I have Marty Seifert from the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities and Dominic Jones from the Red Rock Rural Water System the manager there to talk about the project in detail.
Thank you. Mr. Seifert, welcome back to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm here on behalf of Red Rock Rural Water today. I just want to lay a few facts out for the members. We do have some sheets in your packets. There's one that is listed talking points that we put together. As Representative Schumacher said, this is funding a portion of the cost of the expansion. So the bill itself, what will you get for the bill? The bill will provide for 110 miles of water pipeline, four pumps, a treatment station, a water tower, and fresh, clean water for thousands of residents, chiefly in southwestern Minnesota. A lot of bills that are heard in these committees are certainly necessary and very needed. This is a bill that I think it fits in the need versus want category. Recent testing in Murray County showed that 20% to 30% of the wells are exceeding primary drinking water standards for arsenic. 20% to 30% are exceeding the primary drinking water standard for nitrates. Arsenic is something that develops naturally. It is not something from ag runoff or other types of chemicals. Arsenic is a natural thing that happens in that particular area, unfortunately. I do have a water sample. Dominic, this was taken yesterday. This is a I'll just pass it around for members to look at because it's hard to see. That's the water. The clean one is the water that's from the Red Rock water system that they would be getting. The other sample is from the Lake Chetek area, and some of what provoked the more recent testing is we had flooding last year in the Lake Chetek area that provoked a lot of, because we had seepage from the overflow of the lake that provoked a lot of the testing. And then when we looked at some of these standards, we're horrified at seeing, you know, arsenic, nitrates, and these other things that people are drinking and bathing in, frankly. They may have in-home treatment systems. Mr. Jones from the system will testify to what some of the people are doing themselves. If this was a municipality, and I work primarily with the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, but we're hired by Red Rock to help with this kind of on an emergency basis. If this were a municipal water system, Mr. Chair and members, this would be shut down. This would be, we are exceeding arsenic and nitrate levels to the point where if this was the city of Marshall or the city of St. Paul or the city of Mankato or what, you know, just pick a city, they would be told you are under a boil order or you will have to be shut down to find a different water source. But because this isn't a rural area, they don't have to necessarily comply with that by law. The primary drinking water standards are, many of you know, are the highest standards that there are. So if you look at other states where they face systems like this, legislators knew the problem, but they didn't do anything about it. In Minnesota, historically, when we find out there's a problem, we do something about it. And it's not a regional issue. It's not a partisan issue. We put our heads together and we solve the problem. The most cost-effective solution to this problem is to have the Red Rock water system come in and not build, you know, all sorts of water towers. There's, as you can see from the map, members, that's in your packet, there's a small town that will be brought in into the system as well. The Water Commission debated a lot of this. I was privileged to be allowed to sit at the table last year to listen to the Water Commission debate these types of issues. They're looking at the most cost-effective ways to provide clean drinking water to the people of Minnesota. And in this particular area, to bring clean water to thousands of people, it makes the most sense to go with the Red Rock water system because they already have the permit in hand from the DNR, because that's a big deal, too, is if you can't get the permit, why are you wasting your time? The permit is in hand. The pre-engineering was already put in for, and I would point out to members, this isn't a free ride bill. This pays for a portion of the system. The members of this water system will have to pay about $16,000 each for this to work. So I was listening to some of the questions from members earlier, like, you know, is this the whole cost? Is this, what does this do? This will be $30,000 to $40,000 per hookup if this bill doesn't pass. which I don't think people are going to really want to make that work. But Red Rock can work with the county on an assessment system to spread this out over time and at least try to make this somewhat affordable for people, even though this is a very low-income area. These people do not have high incomes by any means. But putting our heads together, this is the best solution we can come up with. As you look at the water sample, obviously a lot of this is aesthetics more than anything. The point I want to drive home is probably under the handout under 3A, 3B, and 3C. It's what you don't see in the water that's probably the biggest problem. What you do see in the water is obviously horrifying. But to me, it's the nitrate and the arsenic level is really what I think members certainly need to be aware of. We are scurrying around meeting with as many members as possible in both bodies, both chambers, to let them know of the dire consequences of this. This is put in as a bonding bill. It could be cashed as a one-time appropriation through environment or some type of other committee. But you know, now that people are becoming aware of this, we haven't had one member say, you know, I think this is something that could just be done some other day. We do appreciate the support people have. We do have a timeline that is in the members' packets just on kind of the history of Red Rock and as it's expanded across that particular part of the state. We also have support from our local units of government and people in that area is kind of the best cost-effective way of moving forward. With that, Mr. Chair, I would probably turn it over to Dominic Jones, who's the director of Red Rock Rural Water, and then I'll just be available for questions after you're available.
Sounds good. Mr. Jones, come on down. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
I'm Dominic Jones. I'm manager of Red Rock Rural Water System. Our office is based in Jeffers, Minnesota. One thing I'd like to start on is just a little bit of the history of Red Rock Rural Water. We're actually started in 1981 by being authorized under Statute 116A in Minnesota law. And from that time, the first water pump by our system was to just roughly 300 members, and that was in 1985. If you follow the timeline, we have had multi-million-dollar projects of which we have successfully built to now 2,500 rural members in southwest Minnesota. It's a population of about 8,000 people down there. And with these hookups, as Mr. Seifert said, you know, it's not a free ride for these people. We have recently completed projects in Representative Gunther's area that has brought water to approximately 120 new members in the last couple of years. Through that process, those people are paying $16,000. We're not a mandatory hookup system. It's all voluntary. Our staff and engineers, we work diligently together to obtain easements, permits, appropriation permits, and then we bid this out to contractors, of which we're fortunate we have several very good ones in the state of Minnesota to do these type of projects. They are large projects. There are a lot of miles of pipeline. And Mr. Seifert, through his testimony, I believe listened diligently to our board members, you know, and the seriousness of this. And the project that we're proposing is indeed over $11 million. The project didn't just start yesterday. We knew of issues out there of the water that looked visually like you've seen. I took those samples myself yesterday. The aesthetic part of it is still a major concern for the residents of that area. The member that I, or the resident that I took the sample from, told me that he uses 3 bags of salt per week. That water had a hardness level of 66 grains per gallon. It had 0.4 milligrams per liter of manganese. That's the black that you've seen in the water, and 0.38 of iron. even aesthetically, that contributes then to the need for softener salt. In the Lake Chetek area of this project, of where the sample was taken, they are a sewered community. And they are mandatory, have to hook up to their sewer system. We believe, and their engineers believe, that this will also help the wastewater effluent of their system, because those 3 bags of salt per week will now be reduced by approximately 75%. And so if we can keep that out of the wastewater stream, we feel it's better for the environment too. The city of Avoca has very similar water, discolored, aesthetically unpleasing. Their issue is they don't have a backup water source at their facility, and they are committed to working with us to get water to them. And it's on our way to the lakes area and for the general, the benefited area of this project. So I encourage you, and I thank you for allowing us to speak, and I'd be, on behalf of the system, I'd be honored to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Members, any questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Project, again, seems very necessary. But I'll have to bring up my comment again about voluntary. You said this is a voluntary thing. So how can you plan as to the cost to members when you don't know exactly how many are going to be hooking up?
Mr. Jones.
Thank you. Last year, we had 100 people just in the vicinity of where that sample was taken sign a letter of intent to hook up, and that's only within a few miles of the lake itself. We have had since 1985 over 500 phone calls from residents within Marie County wanting this. The one thing that we cannot do in our system is overcommit our existing water sources. We had to find a water source before we could get to this point. And to do so, the Red Rock Rural Water System invested ourselves out of our revenue monies, that we invested over $500,000 in the past 4 years to find the water source, to go through the permitting, to hire the hydrogeologist that helped us with our part one of the wellhead protection area. Now it comes to the major infrastructure, of which is very expensive. And we have had in areas, when we start a project and we estimate that historically, we have never fell short. It's always exceeded. Southwest Minnesota is an area I wish we could be considered in the area of 10,000 lakes. It doesn't feel like it when we're searching for good quality water, and it's extremely hard. Our process to do that, we search 10 miles along the Des Moines River Valley because there's no deeper good quality water in southwest Minnesota that we are fortunate to have found. And so we rely on superficial aquifers. These superficial aquifers are newer water. They're under 20 years old, and so we rely on wellhead protection. And we do a great job, we feel. The area that we sited this well and water source on that we have permitted, that source is a partnership to buy that property. It was in CRP, could have been converted back to row crop. But instead, we partnered with the Pheasants Forever, Minnesota DNR. We found our source. It'll be perpetually grassland for benefit of the environment. And so we had to find the source first. We cannot overcommit to our members that we currently serve, and water's very hard to find. And that's probably the hesitation before going public and getting official sign-ups, of which we use the assessment process. And we will do that, and before we spend the majority of these dollars, we'll have our commitments in hand prior to that start.
Other member questions? Representative Brand.
Yeah, just a quick question. You know, we're talking about the residential piece, but what about, like, the business piece? So, like, in that area, there's a lot of farming and ranching going on. Does this affect what goes on for livestock production?
Mr. Jones.
Thank you for the question. Primarily, you know, we serve anybody that's within reasonable distance of our pipeline routes, which is increasingly we extend our pipeline routes as needed to get to people. We do serve approximately probably, you know, livestock in our area is probably stable, but it's not as fast growing. One of the reasons is livestock production. And the we have in this last project, more in Martin County, we had 12 hog units hook up to our water. One of the main reasons and a business benefit to them is the young livestock, the small swine, are very susceptible to sulfates in the water. And when that is at 8,800 milligrams per liter, and the recommended limit on that is not to exceed 250 milligrams per liter, that creates scours in young livestock, and they have loss. It's not as susceptible to do the beef industry, but we still have many, many members, and I call those businesses. I call the some of the shops around the Lake Chetek area those businesses. The housing development around the lakes area, the construction is unbelievable. They're into their fourth tier on some of their residential units. So economic development, yes. And I think we vitally support the businesses within the area and small towns.
Thank you.
Representative Salk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My questions were somewhat along that line. Commercial users, are you an open sign-up for any business development, all that sort of thing, or do you do some sort of metering, or do you meter by cost? There's got to be something that you use to manage, because you couldn't allow somebody who is a gigantic water user for industrial purposes that they would basically be consuming the product for residential piece. And I'll let you answer that, and then I've got a follow-up.
Mr. Jones.
Thank you. Very good question. We have meters on every connection that we serve water to. Every resident, every business, every farm has a water meter. And incidentally, our water meters that we're now replacing after being in the system, you know, graduated throughout the timeline, but we're replacing them with a more technology-based meter where we can read those meters from our office. They send a meter reading every day. We can see the history of use every hour. And we need to do it to that detail, you know, because of the questions you've asked. And our members that hook up are limited to 4,000 gallons per day on an annual basis for the $16,000. They cannot exceed that. If they are, they're going to be charged a demand charge over and above that. And so, yes, we have meters. We have to be very cautious. Great question. So you can't use unlimited water. We only have so much water available that we can serve. An example of that, I know this because I'm also the City of Windham mayor and down in southwest Minnesota. And the City of Windham actually went into a water purchase agreement with Red Rock Rural Water when I started back in 1993. That hookup was made in 1997. It also served an ethanol plant at that time that was using like 4 gallons a minute for 1 gallon of ethanol. That has drastically changed now. But at that time, they were using 140 million gallons a year in drinking water purchased from the City of Windham to create ethanol. What our system did, because we purchased water from the City of Windham, and cost, as you say, and the metering is important, is why use drinking water for ethanol production? We found a water source that was, not terrible water, but usable for ethanol production, and we replaced that supply. we built an 8-inch line all the way 14 miles to an ethanol plant, and they paid that back in 5 years. And so that's just an example of how critical that water is, and we have to respect our drinking water supplies that we have.
Yeah. Representative Selk.
Thank you for that. That kind of walks down the line of some questions also that I was concerned about. I'm just going to shift to the source question that I had, which maybe just my naivety, or sometimes I think I know things that I really don't know. And that's when you drill for water, you're going through aquifers on the way down. So you must manage which aquifer you're going to tap into, because of whichever decision you make is going to impact either your other wells or wells by other users. So I'll let you play with that for a while.
Mr. Jones.
Okay. Thank you for the question. The geology in our area, I think I stated it before, is we look for surficial aquifers, because the deeper water, where you would have to go through the surficial and go to the deeper water, it's maybe more protected deeper, but it's terrible water quality. We could not find a receiving stream that the wastewater the reject water out of a water filter plant would accept. And so we look at surficial sources, so we do not go through other aquifers. We are the top aquifer generally along the Des Moines River. And this river, where we have the majority of our water sources, we have two that we own, operate, and maintain, and they're about 1,500 gallons a minute that we supply to our current membership. They are about 90 foot in depth. It's sand and gravel from top down to clay. And so that's why that wellhead protection is so important. At minimum, we own 160 acres around our well field.
Representative Selk.
Thank you. I think I just distracted myself. Yeah, I'm going to pass because whatever, it escaped me.
All right. Representative Liz Lagarde.
Just a clarifying question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, I'm learning. Did you say 8,800 in sulfates? Did I hear you right?
No, 880.
Okay.
Milligrams right. Per liter of sulfates.
All right, thank you.
Representative Selk, looks like it came back to you.
Thank you. Irrigation, that's the last of the layers, and I don't think I heard you say anything about that. I'm assuming there's got to be severe control of irrigation, but maybe my assumption is wrong.
Mr. Jones.
Irrigation is not allowed on our system. We could not supply that. Right. Our largest users are, it's probably right now, we have one farrow to finish unit that uses probably an average of 40 gallons per minute, and the other one is the city of Huron Lake, who we just hooked up 2 years ago, and they use probably in that 60 gallons a minute on average, you know, the small communities. And that's one thing we pride ourselves on. We serve 12 small communities. It's a regional concept, you know, where we can do the most efficient with the money that we get.
Thank you.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Seifert, I know you mentioned St. Paul, but I've been here 22 years and I've never known of a PFA loan to St. Paul. So just so you understand that most of the PFA goes out to greater Minnesota. And what I heard once or twice and then all of a sudden dropped off the face of the earth was the reference to nitrates in the water. Mm-hmm. And this is more for Representative Schumacher. What's going on, because it's such a huge livestock, it's generated so much by livestock and agriculture, what is going on or what is being done to reduce that? Because nitrates in the water are pretty costly to remove.
Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mahoney. I can't point to anything specific. I know that the ag communities are continuing to do what they can to promote best practices when it comes to runoff. Obviously, the people who are putting nitrates in the ground to help their crops grow don't want it washing out into the the water. They want it to stay in the fields, and so it's a continuing bit of science that they are working with to try and find the best way to apply it so that it stays applied and to use the least amount possible with it. They don't want to have to spend money on nitrogen if they don't have to.
President Mahoney.
So I know this is kind of an Iowa question, but what are your thoughts about how the Iowa legislature handled it with the city of Des Moines and their nitrogen problem?
Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Mahoney. I am unfamiliar with that at the moment and can't speak to it.
Let me fill you in.
Representative Mahoney.
They passed a law that said the city of Des Moines could not sue for damages on the nitrates in their water and that they couldn't ask the farmers to make any changes. So this is an issue for us because in the metro area, we end up helping out in greater Minnesota so often. I just want to make sure that we don't have to help more than we're being asked.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney. I appreciate the background on that and your comments.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you. I know a study we had a few years ago says the majority of excess nitrate that comes off of any ground comes off the lawns in people in cities where they apply a little bit, their grass is pea green, they apply a lot, it's Kelly green. So that's where they found out the majority of over-application of nitrates came from, not from farmers' fields who can't afford to spend that money for something they don't need to put in there.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I couldn't help getting in on this one, too. We're getting kind of beyond the scope of, in a sense, but, you know, Representative Mahoney brings up a point, but the supposed nitrates from agriculture are considered non-point sources of pollution, and they are really exempt from some of these requirements that cities do have to take care of. And as Representative Schumacher mentioned, agriculture is changing. A lot of precision applications, as you've seen, too, on some of the trips we've taken, that agriculture is becoming much more prescriptive in the way they use fertilizer, the variable rates, precision application, things like that. And we're all working together. The nitrogen rule is coming into effect, and it's the hope of all of us, I believe, that we would reduce the levels of nitrates in the water supplies and such, and that we're all in this together.
Representative Mahoney, to that point, and members, again, let's try to keep comments, questions to House File 313.
I was going to end when I did, but I want you to understand that I sat through the ag committees for all of those particular hearings, and I know we've come up with some sense of let's see what we're going to happen. I just don't want anyone to think that all of the legislators aren't kind of keeping an eye on this, because we do want to fix this problem. Yeah. It's a problem that affects water supply, and we've spent a tremendous amount of money on the Lewis and Clark. We're going to spend a lot of money here. And as the past governor said, you know, it's a basic right. Everybody should have clean water. And I agree with that, and I support these particular issues. But I also want people to understand, particularly that live outside of the areas, like, you know, we don't have that in St. Paul, we don't have that particular problem, that we do keep an eye on this stuff, and we are looking over your shoulder to make sure that you, just like with us in the city, you out in greater Minnesota are living up to the promises that we've all made.
Representative Sauk to House File 313.
Thank you. To your issue where you brought up the idea of wellhead protection, you said you had space and you generally protected that through use, a managed use, pheasants for heaven, forever, and the space and how the top was planted, all of those elements, which all speaks to the issue of you're controlling also the water infiltration and or anything else that would contribute to your water source. Can you give me even the basic picture of how far away from a wellhead do you want to go in order to protect your water source? And then What speed of drop are you dealing with? Because you mentioned that you're trying to deal with water that's performing from the top surface, not like the wells I had were 300-foot deep wells, and we were going through a couple of aquifers to get there. So if you can just talk a bit about that space that you're reserving and how you manage that.
Mr. Jones.
Thank you. The top layers are the most difficult to control, and we, in our existing sources, we have at minimum a half-mile buffer between our wells and agricultural-type planting. When we were looking at this current source in this project, when we were looking for that, one of the conditions were is we wanted it CRP, REM, perpetual easement, wooded forest, and we have a buffer around this one of a half mile also. And you also have to look at the runoff areas that come into these, and Mother Nature can do wonders if we give it enough buffer.
Yep.
And, you know, that's what we see. The other thing I would, I'm not going to say I'm a chemist or anything like that, but some of the nitrate, nitrogen, some of that is naturally occurring. And I can't tell you how that integrates, but, you know, that's one thing as we discuss this whole, I'm sorry I'm back on the nitrate thing, but when we discuss this, some of it is naturally occurring. Excuse me.
I tried to stay.
So, no, you did, but I couldn't help myself. But, you know, so I think that, you know, in looking at water sources, we have a different perspective. We make sure before we say, yes, we're going to invest $500,000 in this, we have to know we can access the property. It will be perpetual easement or ownership. It'll stay in grass, either owned by us or partners. And we'll take that approach. Gravel pits, that's another thing, possible contamination things that we look at in our wellhead protection plan. Because in superficial aquifers, gravel pit, that's where we get our gravel in southwest Minnesota. And so we look at that, too.
Thank you.
All right. Other member questions? Seeing none, this is a public hearing. Is there anybody in the audience who wishes to testify for or against House File 313? Seeing none, Representative Schumacher, any closing comments on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing the bill. Thank you to the committee for the time today to discuss this and for the robust discussion that we had on this issue. And I ask for your support.
Very good. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 313 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Motion prevails, and House File 313 is re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Thank you, gentlemen. And last up today, we have House File 1308. Representative Hansen, welcome to the committee. And I will move your bill, House File 1308, to be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. This is an awesome bill, and I'd like to get the money. And we're at the end of the day, right?
Thank you.
Actually, I do have testifiers here. I think some of you over the years have heard concerns that I brought forward relating to inflow infiltration, Robert Street. This is the city of West St. Paul again. This is a project that has not started, so it could be bondable. And it relates to lift stations, pumping stations. If you were here two nights ago in property taxes, the City of West St. Paul has $54 million of debt. The City of West St. Paul is a separate city from the City of St. Paul. It is not part of St. Paul. It is not part of South St. Paul. It's 20,000 people in Dakota County. About 25% of the population is on Medicaid. It is a lot of seniors. We do not have a lot of capacity. So we're here asking you for support for this proposal to help pay for lift stations. It is an older community that has aging infrastructure, and as you can see, this is a big price tag that we need to move our waste. So I have with me the engineer from the city.
All right, welcome. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. I'm Ross Beckwith, City Engineer for West St. Paul. So West St. Paul, as mentioned, is it's 5 miles square, 20,000 people. We have six sanitary lift stations and six force mains, which is basically the pipe and the pump, right? The force main is the pipe. All this infrastructure is constructed in the 1960s. Within the past 4 years, we have replaced three of the lift stations and one of the force main for approximately $3.5 million. We recently, about a month ago, opened bids for another, our largest force main replacement is about $1 million, which will happen this summer. So that leaves us, as I'm counting my head, I've got 12 kind of ticking time bombs out there. We'll be down to about seven after this, and that's where this bill comes in. So we run into issues with, based on the age of our infrastructure, not having replacement parts for things when they do break. I guess if you had a car that was in the 60s and you're still driving it, and you needed a part, you might not be able to go to any auto parts store to get it. We've had our public works staff actually fabricating pieces to band-aid these lift stations together. One of the things that is concerning as well with these old lift stations, our power is all overhead in West St. Paul, pretty much all overhead. So any windstorm, anytime there's a power outage, when a lift station goes down and we get the alert, there's one, we have about 40 minutes to have someone drive in to the shop, pick up a truck with a generator, drive it to the lift station, plug it in. If it's after 40 minutes, you're going to have backups in basements. And I failed to bring a sample along to pass around to anybody, but I think you guys get the picture on that. But that would be disastrous. So, yep, we're here today just to see if there's help for our infrastructure, much needed in West St. Paul. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Beckwith. Representative Hansen, do you have another testifier?
I do, but I know that you've been going through time, and I could just cut to the chase, and we'd really like the money, if that would be helpful. I think we can bring up the city manager, if you'd like.
I'm good with your testimony.
Yeah, I'm good with your
testimony. Yes. All right. Well,
I think they want to hear from you. Quickly.
I'll try.
Welcome, sir. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Charlene, I'm Ryan Schrader. I'm the city manager for the city of West St. Paul. Thank you for the opportunity for this hearing. I'm here kind of to talk a little bit about the why. You know, why are we in front of you asking for money? Representative Hansen already sort of addressed this, but because we're a metro community, I think oftentimes there's an assumption that we're fiscally successful, that we've got as much money as we would need to do whatever it is that we need to do. And West St. Paul sort of finds itself in the kind of beginning stages of a perfect storm. You know, the recession, I'm going to mention the recession. We've all, throughout the state, we've had, you know, kind of we've slowly been plodding forward trying to recover from the recession of 2008, and I'm here to say as part of my comments that we haven't made it there yet. I took a look at sort of random cities from around the state to see where their tax capacity values have moved since 2008. It's not completely random. Moorhead is one of them, for instance, that I've compared to. And most cities have basically made it back to the values that they had prior to 2008 or at 2008. West St. Paul is still 25% below our taxable tax capacity that existed at that time. Moorhead, just to mention Moorhead, of the cities I looked at, Moorhead's the rock star. I think the growth has been, since 2008, has been at about 60% above 2008. We're 25% below.
I do want to point out the representation of Moorhead and West St. Paul is great. So it's just
I like to think so.
Mr. Chair, to continue just quickly.
Please, yes.
We also just kind of automatically compare ourselves to like-sized cities from throughout the state. There's 28 cities that we compared ourselves to from greater Minnesota and 39 from the metro area. And because we're in the metrics, and so I always look at household income and tax capacity. In comparisons to both of those groups, greater Minnesota cities, our tax capacity is below that of the mean of the greater Minnesota cities by not much, 3%. Our household income, as Representative Hansen mentioned, referred to, is also below the mean of greater Minnesota cities. So even though we're a first-ring suburb, we compare more closely to our friends in greater Minnesota. When we compare to metro cities of similar size, we're 26% below the mean in tax capacity, and we're 35% below the mean in household income. If you look at, reduced lunch, 60% of our households are eligible for reduced lunch. And then the debt that was mentioned, part of the reason for our extreme debt is, one, we took on a state highway project that, after the fact, it's something that probably should have been rethought, but we did that, and we're there. And then we have a significant amount of deferred infrastructure construction. Just to put it in perspective, we have about a $14 million general fund budget. We currently have a $4.1 million debt. We project that by 2029, continuing on the path that we're on, we'll hit $7 million in debt, half of our general fund. So we're trying to figure out a way to solve for that, and that's why we're trying to get in front of people like you. With that, I'll conclude.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Schroeder. Any questions from members?
Yeah.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, it sounds like a project that needs to be done. I do have to ask, the way it's worded, the bond money would go to the PFA, who would then give you back money. And PFA has their listing of awarding grants and such. So how would this be different, or what's the reason for the money going back and forth?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Anderson. And kind of following up on Representative Mahoney's comment earlier, it's very rare for money to come from the PFA to any metro community. And so the way this was drafted was, and that's why it's in front of this committee, because it's PFA, was to send it to PFA for a grant to the city. That was the way it was recommended to be drafted. So,
any other member questions? Seeing none, is there anybody from the audience who wishes to testify for or against House File 1308? Seeing none, Representative Hansen, any closing comments?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and you can see I'm the sole author on this. If anybody else would like to co-author, Representative Gunther or Representative Purcell, it would be helpful to show support. In seriousness, the City of West St. Paul has been in front of this legislature a lot. A lot. And it has not received anything. And the people who pay for that are the residents of the city. And I'm asking, and I'm in all seriousness, I'm asking for support for this because they can't pay for it.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Members, I renew my motion that House File 1308 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Motion prevails, and House File 1308 is re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Members, just an announcement before we adjourn. We will not be meeting on Monday the 4th. Our next meeting will be Wednesday, March 6th. So to make some changes in your calendars, open up some time for constituents. And with that, we're adjourned.